You know what's a lot more fun than thinking about how to best pay off student loans? Thinking about how rich you're going to be one day in spite of your student loans. That's why we started the Financially Free Era podcast. Financially Free Era, if you search that term on any podcast platform, you're going to find it. It's hosted by my colleague Megan McGuire over at SLP Wealth. And this podcast is where we dive deep into all the things you want to know about how to be wealthy one day. How do you best maximize tax loopholes and write-offs? How do you best invest money? How do you make smart money moves in spite of even a very large six-figure student loan balance that are going to get you where you want to be much sooner? Go follow the Financially Free Era podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I promise you, if you like Student Loan Planners podcast, you will love Financially Free Era by SLP Wealth. Search that term, follow the show, you will love it. Hello and welcome to the Student Loan Planner podcast. I was going to say welcome to week two of the Snowpocalypse No School, Travis's exhausted version of the SLP podcast. For those of you that are in sunnier climates or less snowy climates, the Southeast does not get a lot of snow. And whenever it does, everything shuts down as if the zombie apocalypse has occurred. I live in the Southeast, and where we're at, we've had ice storm followed by snow, followed by more snow in a couple days. The schools are absolute chaos. Nobody knows what the heck's going on. You know, everybody is like, has their hair growing out. There's bags under every parent's eyes. And, but you know what? The SLP podcast must go on, guys. Come on. So I'm digging deep for you today. And we're going to talk about some of the new regulations around the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that just got released. You know, life happens. But like I said, borrowers are the priority, guys. We gotta protect you guys. We got to keep coming out with good pods. Just joking around here. So if I sound incoherent at any point in today's podcast, know that it's the ice and the snow's fault, and know that I will be back in control of my full faculties and my amazing dad jokes within weeks. Anyways, let's dive into the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. So the Department of Ed had to come out with the regulations to implement the One Big Beautiful Bill that Department of Ed really has to get these regulations in place, because One Big Beautiful Bill Act says it was passed in July of 2025. You got to do a bunch of things, Department of Ed, by July 2026, like the RAP plan, all this stuff relating to the RAP plan, new borrowing limits, new accountability measures, all kinds of things. And normally when you do regulatory stuff, you got to get it into the calendar by November to have it take into effect the following July. Well, that was just not enough time. And keep in mind, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, we also had a massive government shutdown that lasted for a really long time in between when the bill passed and when that November 30th date would have had to happen anyway. Of course, their position, Department of Ed's position, is, well, the Congress demands Department of Ed do regulations to implement this new law, therefore it's acceptable that it happened out of cycle. So that's why we're seeing all these big, beautiful bill regulations come out now. In early January, they're going to be potentially implemented in only a few months. And we were watching these regulations for a few points of clarification. This, unfortunately, is not the last story, though. We still have more regulations coming down the pipeline. The additional regulations that we're expecting to see are from the SAVE plan settlement. The SAVE plan settlement got settled in December, right around the holidays. That settlement struck down 400 pages of the SAVE plan regulations, minus a couple random things about forbearance. That settlement requires the Department of Ed to come out with more regulations in response to the SAVE plan being struck down, and all of the many accompanying regulations surrounding that. So, for example, in the SAVE plan regulations, there was stuff about family size. There was stuff about IDR recertification. You know, there was stuff about really all kinds of things. And the also weighted average stuff was in there for consolidation loans. I mean, so there was all kinds of stuff that was struck down. The Department of Ed has to, like, now say what its position is. So we don't know when those regulations are going to come out, but we do have the One Big Beautiful Bill Act regulations that just got out, and we'll talk about those. Just so we know, nomenclature, whenever I talk One Big Beautiful Bill, because it's such a mouthful, sometimes I say OB3, because it's O, three Bs, and then A. So the OB3 Act, if I say OB3, that's what I'm mentioning, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. So let's talk about some of those regs that were interesting. So first, I want to tackle something for Parent Plus borrowers. If you are not a Parent Plus borrower, feel free to skip ahead a couple minutes. The reason I want to bring this up is we did do a whole podcast episode about it. Those are the borrowers that are the most in danger right now with all the chaos going on with the student loan system. The reason why I'm frustrated is Department of Ed is putting out conflicting information about this. They have on their website, on the FAQ, I'll just read this FAQ, and this is kind of pertinent for non-Parent Plus people too. It says, what deadlines do borrowers need to meet to be eligible for IBR? And it says, I'll read it directly from the FAQ on the website, borrowers who have eligible loans taken out before July 2026 are permitted to access IBR, ICR, and pay after July 1st, 2026. There's no restriction on enrolling in IBR, ICR, or pay after July 2026 unless the borrower receives a disbursement of a new loan on or after July 2026. That's a big problem. So if you take out a new loan, that could potentially impact your ability to sign up for the IBR plan. That would be very, very bad if you're eligible for the new IBR plan, because that's 10% of income for 20 years instead of 10% of income with RAP for 30 years. And the deduction is a lot more generous with the IBR plan. Now, that's just borrowers in general. What about Parent Plus specifically? So it says borrowers who must consolidate in order to access IBR, ICR, and pay must have their consolidation loan dispersed no later than June 30th, 2026 in order to access IBR and ICR and pay. And then it says borrowers who must consolidate Parent Plus in order to access IBR and ICR do not need to be enrolled in ICR before June 30th, 2026 in order to eventually access IBR. It says borrowers who receive disbursements on new loans or on a new consolidation loan on or after July 2026 will not have access to IBR, ICR, or pay, even if they were previously enrolled in those plans. We strongly encourage borrowers who must consolidate their loans in order to access the IBR, ICR, and pay plans to apply for their consolidation loan at least 3 months before July 1st, 2026. So that's April, May, June. So consolidation's no later than April 1st, basically, to ensure their consolidation loan is disbursed before July 1st, 2026. And now it says OB3 eliminates the ICR and pay plans entirely in the future. We will publish more information about ICR enrollment deadlines that borrowers with consolidated Parent Plus loans must meet before ICR is eliminated in order for them to be able to access the IBR plan. This is what's frustrating to me. They literally put out a training recently that one of our consultants attended, Department of Ed did, and in that training, they said Parent Plus borrowers needed to make a payment on ICR before June 30th, 2026 to be able to access IBR. That is contradicting their own stuff. That's why I'm so frustrated right now, and it's not just because of ice storms taking the kids out of school for 2 weeks. It is because Department of Ed, because they've been slashed to the bone, because the current administration doesn't believe it should exist, I don't know, have the manpower or whatever to issue consistent statements, which is very disconcerting when you're talking about people that have Parent Plus loans that literally need this loophole to be able to retire, right? That's pretty frustrating that we're getting all this conflicting information. So again, what do we know right now? The official FAQ says that all Parent Plus people have to do is be consolidated before July 1st, 2026. That's the only thing that you have to do according to the official FAQ of Department of Ed. Some of the Department of Ed's training that they're putting out is saying the wrong thing. Okay, so whoever's in charge of training at Department of Ed, please say the right thing in these trainings and tell everybody that, you know, you don't have to make an ICR payment before June 30th, 2026 to be able to access IBR. Now, what's concerning to me too is there's also been stuff that have said Parent Plus folks can eventually just access IBR directly without having to do the ICR payment step first. And in this same FAQ, they literally say, oh, we're going to put out some information for Parent Plus folks so that they know how to pay their ICR payment in order to access IBR. That doesn't make any sense to me. They're saying you have plenty of time past July 1st, 2026 to get on IBR. But then in the same token, they're saying we're going to publish more information about how you need to pay an ICR payment to access IBR. So it seems like they just have their head up their you-know-whats and they can't figure out what to tell people. That's not been the first time that's happened. That's happened in multiple administrations, by the way. And, you know, the careers people at Department of Ed are just doing their best. And so we definitely owe them a debt of gratitude because they've already been through a terrible experience themselves, having to worry about their jobs and getting, you know, layoffs and things like that, right? So I think that whoever is responsible for leading the Department of Ed under the current administration, you know, in whatever capacity, should issue consistent statements, because it's very confusing for borrowers to have to navigate conflicting statements. So I think that if you're a Parent Plus borrower, what we can know is that they promised us additional information. So I think we just have to wait for that additional information And at least we have screenshots of the FAQ where they say you do not have to pay an ICR payment by June 30th to access IBR. So we know that. The only thing that we do know for sure is you do have to consolidate if you have Parent Plus loans by June 30th, 2026. Now, this is applicable now for everybody. What I'm about to talk about is taking out a loan after July 2026. If you take out a loan after July 2026, you cannot access IBR, period. Now, that's really concerning. Pretend you're in your fourth year, rising fourth year of dental school. You're grandfathered in. You can take out as much as you want in year four. You know, if I'm thinking about this, and let's say I've got $350,000 of debt and I need another, I don't know, 80, you kind of have a decision to make. You kind of have to make a choice about what to do. And the reason you got to make the choice about what to do about your federal student loans is, like, if you take out those federal student loans, like, you might be stuck with the wrap plan, which is a 30-year plan. The most important thing is to graduate. Let me make that clear. The most important thing is to get your degree and be done. Taking any kind of gap year or dropping out for a semester to earn some money or something, I wouldn't support that for people who directly have access to PLUS loans. Parent PLUS is a little bit more complicated, but for people that are, you know, have access to Grad PLUS and limited borrowing, it might be that you just want to say, screw it, I just want to take the max out and get my degree, and, you know, maybe eventually they'll change the wrap plan to something else, which probably is going to happen. But if you are in that fourth year of school, one of the consequences of borrowing after July 2026 would be paying for 30 years instead of paying for 20 years on an IDR plan. So that's significant. Anyhow, FAQs that are conflicting are frustrating. So that's one observation. Hopefully we get clarity on that in the coming weeks. Now I'm going to talk about something that I think is kind of interesting as well, the professional school definition of professional students, now relevant because the OB3 Act gives $20,500 a year borrowing limits to non-professional master's and grad students, and they give $50,000 per year for professional students. Notably, there are some key fields that are excluded from that definition. So physical therapists are excluded from professional student definition. So are PAs, so are NPs and CRNAs, and a lot of other professions that we serve are included in that. So in other words, MDs, chiropractors, pharmacists, veterinarians, et cetera, are included in the professional student definition. So the way they came to this definition is, for physical therapy, it seems like they made a carve out to block physical therapists from accessing the $50,000 per year borrowing limits because, in their view, physical therapy used to be a master's degree program that turned into a doctoral program because the schools wanted to make more money. And I think that they're emphatically correct in that assumption. It's not super fair to physical therapy students that they're capping their borrowing limits. But it is true, I think, if you look at physical therapy schools, they pushed to extend the length of training so they could make more money. I don't know. That's at least my opinion, right? If you look at sort of the stuff I've read about it, the schools essentially wanted people to have that doctoral degree and they pitched it as a great thing, but the earnings didn't really go up all that much, but the revenue to the schools went up by 50% or something like that. So they're trying to bring down the hammer on PT schools with these regulations. Now for PAs and NPs and CRNAs, what they are saying in the regulations that were released is that they don't support professional schools being called professional schools for borrowing purposes. Now, they do say that they don't mean that they don't consider PAs a profession. That's not what they mean in their regulations. What they're defining is the definition of professional student for borrowing purposes, which they view as distinct. And the reason that they came down on PAs and NPs not having the access to the $50,000 borrowing limits per year is, in their mind, any profession that, and this is going to cause some controversy, any profession that requires supervision by other professionals shouldn't be considered a professional student. In other words, they view PAs and NPs, since most states have, a lot of states have them need to be directly supervised or have sign-offs from physicians to be able to do certain things, they don't think that PAs and NPs should be accessing those higher borrowing limits. Now, this is something that I could easily see changing in the final version of the regulations once public comment comes into play. I do think they're going to get an outpouring of comments from NPs, nurses, PAs, PTs, et cetera, all of the different health professions out there, they're going to talk about shortages. They're going to talk about, why did you include one profession over another? Like, why did you include pharmacists and chiropractors, but you didn't include PAs and NPs? So there's going to be a lot of chiseling at that definition, I would predict, because they still have to ask for the public to comment on all these regulations, and they have to respond to all these comments that will be coming out there soon. If I was going to bet, I would maybe bet there's maybe a 50-50 chance they just change their mind and say, well, you know what, sure, we'll include PAs and NPs and PTs in the definition of professional student, but you know, maybe they want to make a statement and say, well, you know, NPs and PAs are one of the highest ROI degrees out there in terms of length of training to earnings. And, you know, if there's any profession that should be able to find private loans to fund it, it should be those. And then the PT field, I think they want to force PTs to drop the doctoral requirement and go back to a master's degree. So I think that that's probably what they are trying to do with regulation, is to actually force change on schools and on, you know, the default of how much student loans people can get. There's going to be a lot of conversation about borrowing limits, professional schools, et cetera. Keep in mind, if you are in school already and have already borrowed before July 2026, you can borrow up to the completion of your degree or 3 years after, whatever is shorter. People will be grandfathered into being able to borrow PLUS loans past the point. I think one thing that was just completely not thought about, though, in the bill and the regulations is, what happens when you have Parent PLUS borrowers that can borrow unlimited sums after July 2026, but you also cut them off from any affordable payment options? So that doesn't make any sense. We have Parent PLUS borrowers that have six figures of loans. They might have kids that they need to borrow one or two more years for them. The schools are going to say, hey, borrow the limit, because you don't want junior to drop out, do you? And the parents obviously don't want their kid to not get a degree. That'd be terrible, right? So a lot of the parents are under tons of pressure to take out all of the loans they can for their kid to go to finish their degree. But then those parents are going to be left with zero options, right? Literally no options, to be able to afford those payments. And so that's not a thought through policy, something that, you know, they should have either said, hey, no unlimited borrowing for Parent PLUS borrowers at all past July 2026. Or they should have said, you have until 2028 to access affordable payment options. This option that they currently have, I would predict it's not going to survive in its current form. They will eventually have to make some changes to fix this mass default problem that's going to happen with Parent PLUS borrowers. And I would say that it's definitely going to happen, where you're going to have tens, if not hundreds of thousands, of Parent PLUS borrowers defaulting because of the way that they constructed the bill. Now, one other positive thing, I'll mention one positive thing that made it into these new regulations, the ability to count payments that have already been made for consolidations towards like IDR forgiveness. That looks like it made it into these proposed regulations. It was initially not included. Now it is. That's a great thing, because that suggests that borrowers aren't going to get just decimated and have, you know, the ability to count prior credit towards their new consolidation loan. That wouldn't happen. So that's good. I mean, so in other words, right now it seems like the weighted average credit for consolidation loans is going to be treated like that for IDR forgiveness. We were worried that it was going to be, if you consolidate, you lose all credit except for PSLF, because PSLF is a separate rule where it has the weighted average credit included. But now we're pretty confident that both of those are going to receive weighted average credit, which is good news. One other bit of things we noticed in some of these proposed regs. So for the WRAP plan in 685.20903, there's some concerning language that talks about how advanced payments might not be considered an on-time payment unless you waive the due date requirement or something. I mean, basically, we have to suss out what this really means. But, you know, it used to be that you could make a lump sum payment for PSLF purposes. As soon as you've recertified your payment and you got your new payment, you could count the lump sums for up to 12 months of payments. But if you, let's say you're 1 month away from recertifying, right? Let's say you're about to recertify in 1 month and you make a big lump sum payment right before your recertification date, that would only be able to count for up to 1 month of payments. So in other words, it used to be this very confusing thing that you had to really carefully know and do so that you wouldn't just waste a bunch of money on your PSLF by dumping a bunch of money right before your IDR certification date. Now there's some question as if to they will allow that on the WRAP plan at all. And I think that this just shows us how much is really still uncertain with these new regulations, right? I mean, they really have not thought through a lot of the nuances and the edge cases and the things that are involved with the real life experience of borrowers, which is, you know, that they work for some hospital that's just run by boomers and they're determined to like make matching payments to people's student loans and they've got to take the money or they just forfeit it. And like, how do you use that money and not have it just be completely wasted by dumping it on loans that are going to be forgiven by the federal government anyway? It's stunning to me how many hospitals, you know, again, run by like elder Gen X or boomers just demand that they make matching payments on student loans, not realizing that that's a horribly inefficient way to help your employees with student loans if they're going for PSLF. It seems like with these wrap plan designs, it's going to continue to be confusing and it's going to maybe even be more confusing. But we're going to kind of monitor that to see if they maybe change those regulations in the final draft version of things. So we continue to try to monitor everything going on with student loans right now. I think that if I'm a borrower, I should take a deep breath, right? I should know that my 2025 tax return will almost surely be used to recertify my payments or to get me onto a different IBR plan. So you definitely need to be paying attention to, as you file your taxes, you know, how are you doing it, right? How careful are you doing it? I think that filing separately for taxes is going to be important for a lot of people. Putting the right dependents on the right person's tax returns is going to be important because we still don't have super deep clarity on how they're going to treat, you know, family size definitions with the SAVE plan regs being struck down. And in terms of recertification dates, a lot of people have late 2026 recertification dates. Will those be pushed out yet again? Probably not. Probably you're going to be asked to actually do it this time, right? There's some chance with the midterms expected to not go well for Republicans that you might see some interesting things happen, you know, some magical pushed out dates or something like that for IDR. But, you know, I do think that they want to bring back the status quo of student loans. And so I think that we will see, especially after the wrap plan becomes live, because that is the signature policy the Republicans are saying is the answer to student loans. They're going to have no more negative amortization with the wrap plan because, you know, your interest is going to be subsidized if your required payment doesn't fully cover the interest. The difference is subsidized, and there will be a small, modest principal subsidy for many people. So people will see their student loan balances no longer growing when they're on the wrap plan. And so I think that when that wrap plan goes live, I think you're going to see them bring down the hammer a lot more on borrowers to force people into repayment. I think they're kind of tolerating this ambiguous, what the heck is going on kind of environment right now because they don't have the wrap plan live yet. And so I think they're hesitant to bring down the hammer when they know that they don't have their stuff figured out. We'll see the SAVE plan regs come out, like the post-SAVE plan regs. The public comment period will be in place for a little while. And then maybe by like the spring, we'll have an idea better of what's going on with some of these regs going into place in middle of 2026. And then folks are going to have really interesting choices to make. Like I said, you know, people haven't made those borrowing decisions for the 2026 to 2027 school year yet. When those borrowing decisions happen, people are going to have to decide, do I want to be in debt for 30 years? Luckily for PSLF, that option is still on the table. You know, interestingly enough, until people have actually had the new loan caps fully go into effect, PSLF is going to be even more compelling than it normally is because 10 years compared to 30 is a lot bigger difference than 10 years compared to 20. We're kind of thinking the amount of borrowing that's going to happen for private student loans is going to be kind of limited in 2026 for a couple of reasons. I think the lenders are trying to figure out what the heck is going on. I think that a lot of schools are really smart and they're trying to move up their enrollment dates to the spring or early summer, like pre-July, so that they can get that Grad Plus loan for 3 years. It's uncapped, right? So I think a lot of people are doing a bunch of interesting stuff to try to avoid these strict loan caps for the 2026 to 2027 school year. But the following year, you're going to see the full weight of impact on these loan caps, and it's really going to mess up a ton of programs. I think a lot of programs are going to close, honestly, in 2027. I think 2026, people still have some flexibility. They're still maneuvering around a lot of these rules. But in 2027, I think that you're going to see the hammer really come down in terms of a lot of schools closing, a lot of degrees, like the entire degree is going to have to be redone, like the DPT degree. I don't think it's going to be able to survive in its current form with the loan caps that are being proposed. for future borrowers, right? So it's just going to be a mess, and we're going to be here to help you sort through it. That's what we do, right? We're the trucks with a big old snowplow of student loans, you know, salting the roads when you need it most. That's my goal for the Student Loan Planner podcast. Thank you all for listening so much. If you have questions on a pod, you know, or anything you want to ask about your student loans at the moment, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. And if you need a plan for your loans, studentloanplanner.com/book. And then if you want comprehensive financial planning on everything in your life, you can go to slpwealth.com. Thank you all for listening, and have a great rest of your week, and may warmer temperatures be upon us soon. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.